Welcome, everyone, to the Women Excelling Everywhere podcast. I am your host, Julie Anderson, and I am here with an amazing Emma Weaver. Emma, welcome to the Women Excelling Everywhere podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I am delighted to be here this evening.
I love it. Emma is tying in from all the way over from in Ireland, and I'm here in California. So we're playing with two different time zones, but this is another special edition of this podcast. And the reason why it's special is because this is connected. Emma is another one of our amazing co-authors in our collaborative book, Women Excelling Everywhere, What Defines Their Passion, Discover What Defines Their Passion and Success. And I am just blown away by all of the contributors and all of the synergy and all of the energy that we all have, and what it, the powerful message that we are bringing out to the world. But let me read you a little bit about her bio, and then we'll get to know the real Emma. So Emma Weaver is a trailblazer in the field of mental health and well-being, and the visionary founder of Behind Mental Wealth International. With an unwavering dedication, Emma is on a mission to transform workplaces, creating culture of mental health and well-being excellence through her signature toolbox talks, mental health first aid, and workshops. Drawing from an impressive 23-year experience in the mental health and well-being sector, Emma's expertise has touched countless lives. Her journey is underscored by her deep-seated purpose of a force that propels her to share the hope and expertise through both her personal and professional endeavors. She had her debut novel called The Blue Line, which is achieving international bestseller status, along with our Women Excelling Everywhere book. Yay. Her latest book is Mental Wealth, further solidifies her reputation as an award-winning author, tapping into her expertise, insights into mental health and well-being. So once again, Emma, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Women Excelling Everywhere podcast.
Yay. Gosh, that sounds terribly as if I've achieved so much. When you hear somebody saying it back to you, I'm like, oh gosh, really? Yeah, but amazing, amazing.
It's wonderful. And it's a topic that I'm very passionate about. Yeah. One of the programs that I bring into corporate is corporate well-being, right? Okay. It goes everywhere from having plans in your environment to taking care of the mental health of the workers by the way you interact with them, and all in all and all. And so it's again, there's such a synergy in this book, which has me so wonderfully excited. But let me just kind of take a step back and ask you. I mean, this is you've done amazing work. You've authored several books. But let's get to why you got to this point. Like, tell us a little bit about your background, Emma. Who is Emma, and what led you to go into this field that you're working in?
Thank you. Oh, gosh. So I am a mom of three. I have three wonderful children. My eldest is 28, and then I have a 16-year-old and a 7-year-old. So I am absolutely delighted that there's such a huge gap between them, because that allows me to continue doing the things that I do. And obviously I was a young mum, and that was certainly one of the first things that came to life that, again, and I've mentioned this even in the chapter in the book, it's never a straight line. There's always different things, but it's how you respond and deal with whatever it is that's going on in your life. It definitely changed me as a person. And I know people say this all the time, but having my first daughter made me who I am. I genuinely would not be the Emma Weaver that you were talking to today had I not have had it. She shaped a beautiful future for me, and we kind of grew together. So whenever, obviously, I became a young mum, I went back to college after having her and started on a social work course. And one of my first placements was in day support centre for adults with mental health issues, and some of them have mental health conditions, just depending on what was going on. And when I walked into the room, I realised I knew a lot of people in the room. And I was like, I did not know these people had mental health issues. Now, bearing in mind, this is like 25 years ago
Yeah.
that had mental health issues, and the stigma and the thought process around it was the moment you were diagnosed or it was recognized that you had a mental health issue, it was nearly like, stop everything, you are unwell. These people were living as normal enough lives as they could in the community. They had families, they drove cars, they had jobs, they were the bank managers, the bus drivers, the people you met in the shop. And I remember, even at that young age, I'm going to say young age because, you know, I'll add the 25 years to it. I realised that it was the support within the community. So the support for those within their own community was allowing them to live a fulfilled life in their communities. And it just, that feeling never left me. So that's really what drove me then, I suppose, in the career of supporting people with mental health issues in their communities. So I obviously graduated. I actually graduated on September the 11th, 2001, so the day of the Twin Towers. That's the day I graduated. And built a career around the essence of the importance of supporting people in their own environments as much as possible. And then I managed the mental health services all across different trust areas here in the north of Ireland, and really set the foundation in terms of all that experience, the knowledge, engaging and working with different teams, understanding different impacts of mental health trends, because the world's a different place now than what it was when I was 25. Like, I mean, sure. I don't even think I had a mobile phone, you know, so the world's a completely different place. And that really formed the basis of my understanding. And then about 3.5 years ago, I left that job and founded Mental Wealth International. And again, it was because as much as there's amazing work out there, some of it's there's a lot of gaps in services. And I really believe we need it, that it's quite important to receive the support within a, you know, within your environment or within your community, but in a timely manner. I think timely is very, very important. And now with Mental Wealth International, that's what I do. We train people to be mental health first aiders. So in that moment of need, there's somebody there to support you in that moment. So that's really what's driving Mental Wealth International forward.
I love that. It's interesting that a couple of the things, so you say that you graduated on 9/11. One of the certificates that I hold is on psychological first aid, which is kind of what you're talking about, helping people in that moment that they need it. And that whole entire program came out of the need that was presented in that, out of that tragedy, because they found that, you know, there was all the triaging of the physical, you know, obviously physical injuries, but they were sending in, as the days went on and the search went on and all, they were sending in psychotherapists to go in and help with the first aid to the people mentally, which I think had really missed in the past. So
I know you mentioned that as well, you know, that you work in corporates and things, Gap, but even to have mental health first aiders, or the same as you're saying, psychological first aid, in that moment, the outcome can be so much more better if we are supported in our moment of need. I think it's, and in an environment that's familiar to us, it's been proven, there's a lot of research around it, but certainly even from people that I have worked with over the last few years, it does, you know, it creates a huge impact.
Yeah, totally. And I think part of it is it's almost like catching it before it explodes.
Yes.
Because we have a tendency as human beings, don't we, to, we have that emotional need, and then the time passes and we start to go compartmentalize it, or we put it back here in our head and we're like, oh, I'm okay, I don't need the help anymore. When in actuality, you're still in that vulnerable position, you're just starting to mask it better.
100%. And like, who better than even the people that you're surrounded with every day? And sometimes, not all the time, I just want to say, but sometimes family are very close and they're very emotionally attached. So it's maybe somebody outside of that you trust that could be that one person. And that, like, we quite often tell people, It's good to talk. It is good to talk. We need to talk. Reach out if you need support. Let me tell you, from a personal and professional, background, the hardest thing to do sometimes is to reach out for help. So if you have the right people around you that maybe are trained or that know enough about you to see a difference or a change in your personality or what's going on, somebody reaching in
Yeah.
is what's needed, as well as expecting people who are terribly unwell to reach out for support. If we had enough kind of confidence and competence to go forward to reach into people and say, look, I've noticed you're just not at yourself, or you're a bit quiet, or you've been coming in late. Is everything all right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a wonderful point. In the leadership programs that I lead, and I'm sure it's very similar with what you do. In training leaders, even if they aren't the one that is equipped with the how do you help, they're the ones who are going to notice the most because they're the ones that interact with them as they're leading them on the job. So it's incredibly important, I think, to really to emphasize that in leadership training, that even if you don't have the training psychologically to manage that, simply asking those basic questions and then going and making that connection for them to the person or the team within the organization that handles the or that deals with the mental health wellness, or I love what you say, mental wealth, right? But being able to make those connections, that's so crucial. And teammates as well. You know, the person sitting,
Everybody.
yeah.
Yeah.
The person
It's
sitting next
really
to you in the
trying to,
cubicle.
but it can be anybody. And it's really trying to get us to know. There is an amazing book, and I have it here. It's called Bowling Alone by Robert Pittman. It's actually like it's I mean, look, it's a huge book. And it was based on research of American society in terms of community and how we've kind of lost the art. But it's not really that we've lost the art of community. It just looks a little bit different now than what it did years ago, especially, and I'm going to say, with women maybe excelling in their dreams and their goals and in excellence. And, roles have changed. So community sometimes looks a little bit different, and it might be the workplace, or it might be a group that you go to. It's not necessarily your neighbors or family living close by anymore, but we certainly can create it, and in whatever that looks like. But be intentional, do it in an intentional way, and know what you need as well.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So important. And removing that stigma, you know, taking that away. Look, we all on some level, it's just in the world we live in, we are touched on some level with mental health
Yes.
challenges, right?
Everybody. Yeah.
Everybody is, because that's just
Yeah.
the world that we
And the
live
thing
in.
about women, because it's quite apt that we're doing this evening, because on Saturday evening I was out at a female event. It was called a ladies' night, and I was doing a talk for women. So it was all women in the room. And you know what? There's nothing as amazing as the energy when you get a room full of women that are just allowing themselves to be in the moment and take a couple of hours out of everything else that's expected. And one of the things that I talk about, and hopefully you'll agree, is we're not very good at saying no to things. We are primary caregivers, so everything else gets in the way. So one of the things that I like to even create a conversation around is no is a full sentence. And as women, we're like, no, because, but maybe, no. Just no, that's not for me, or no, not right now. Just we need to get better at that in terms of our well-being, or even as women in business, or really allowing us to focus on what we need to do, and saying no without carrying the weight of a bit of guilt or whatever it is around it.
Very good points. And sometimes it's not no permanently, it's no right now.
No. It's just a no
Right?
for not right now.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's just I can't give my all to this position or to this project or to this thing because I have to take care of something here, right? And it's so that sometimes I think helps women reframe the Or instead of taking it as a negative thing, well, I don't want to let people down. I don't want to, you know, they need me or I need to do this or it's my kids or it's my husband or it's my, you know, the people that I love in the community or the family or whatever. And it's, you're actually doing them a disservice if you take it on when you're not fully capable of managing it. So it's, that's a beautiful sentiment. Now, driving you, do you think there was a pivotal point in your life? Because you said that for many years you were working in that corporate sector, working for someone else. And for the last 3 years, you've been doing this with them, with, you established the Mental Wealth Society. Well, I'm sorry, what's the full name again?
Mental Wealth International.
International, that's what it is. Do you feel that there might've been, or was there a pivotal point, or a, I call them, you know, aha moments, or just a thing that happened that made you go, you know what, I'm done with this, with this, and I want to go do this.
So along with me managing mental health services, I was always involved with, so I founded an adult ADHD charity, and I would have worked a lot with young mums to get them back into education and get childcare. So I was always doing something entrepreneurial, just for want of a better word, along with the job that I was doing. And I do remember, so those skills I felt were transferable. So whenever I was, so if you picture this, so I had offices in all different places because I managed different teams across the Western Trust in terms of mental health. So some of it was addiction, some of it was mental health. It was actually an older people's daycare service. So it was a lot of different teams that I managed. So I had offices in all the different places. So there was one day, so if you became unwell, just say you became unwell, a family member might say to you, you need to go and see the doctor. You go to the doctor, they'd refer you to the community mental health team. The community mental health team would refer you a key worker, and then they might refer you to the service that I was managing, to which I would get a piece of paper telling me about you, and I would invite you in to have a talk. So there was one day I was in, and it was this lady's first time coming in. She was probably in her mid-50s, very quiet of herself, lovely, pleasant woman, but was just done. She was just done. So we were sitting talking away. This lady had reared a family, she had been married, she held a job, I think it might have even been a nurse, and I'm not too sure, but she'd held a job all her life, and there was a death in the family. Okay, so somebody very close to her had died, to which then she became, you know, quite low mood, she became quite unwell of herself, and nobody could pinpoint it. She'd went back to work, it wasn't working, she'd went to her GP, potentially some medication, and then waited 2 years to be on a waiting list for 2 years from the GP to the community mental health team before she even got a key worker, before she was even referred to me. So by the time she was sitting in front of me, she'd lost her job, her marriage was had ended, her marriage had ended, and her whole world had fell apart. And I'm not joking, in that moment, that was my aha moment, I realized if somebody at work or somebody had the insight or confidence to recognize this lady was grieving, she needed counseling, she needed grief support in that moment. I believe her life could have been a lot different, and that's what made me think, no, now that I can't unsee this, now I need to do something about it. So I left, and now I create mental health first aiders, and I do workshops and toolbox talks. In, I go out into places. I have a team of people as well. It's not just me. I have a team of people that do it. We go out into places and deliver this. Instead of expecting people to come to us to a workshop that we're facilitating, HR or health and safety officer or someone, we contact them and we go out into workplaces and deliver this support so that people feel that they're not left on their own, or at least know where to signpost people to in the moment. Because that lady, if you don't know, you don't know. It's one of those things. If you don't know, you don't know. I just was very clearly able to see this lady was grieving. And if she had got the grief support at that initial stage, I believe, obviously I don't know, it was my belief in that moment, things would have been different for her.
Yeah, so true. And that's there's such a big message behind that story. Obviously, it changed the course of your career. But for any of us, you know, we're hearing a lot more about this. A lot of times we don't ask, do you need something? We don't ask, are you okay? Because we don't feel capable of doing anything. And I've told people over and over again, do you realize that probably 75%, and please don't, anyone listening, if you are under the care of a physician or a psychiatrist or psychotherapist, by all means, continue, go. Please do not take anything I'm saying here or anything Emma's saying as a way to change what you're doing or medications or anything. But I really feel that the reality is, when you are a therapist or you are in that position, 75% of your job is just listening. It's just being there, just being a person that somebody can open up to. And if you don't have the skill set to give the advice you don't feel, that's okay. Just listen. And then maybe you can help make those connections. And I think that's a powerful, can have such a powerful impact. And you're right. It makes you wonder how many individuals, had they had the support in the moment.
In the moment.
Yeah. So that's wonderful.
You've put that so beautifully. We just need to hold space for each other sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'd say quite often, you don't have to have all of the answers or any of the answers. Just hold space and find where they need to go. But in the moment, don't, because a lot of people are afraid to ask, how are you? Because they're afraid of the answer, because they're like, but you don't need to do anything. Maybe you just need to listen.
Yeah. You just need to listen, pour a cup of tea and just listen.
Yeah. And then take action then.
Yes.
And say, you know, do I need to ring someone else? Like, here we have Lifeline, the Samaritans. You know, don't ever just leave it there, or at least have a, let's catch up again same time tomorrow. Always have something afterwards, but just to hold the space, because you just never know. But again, if people don't feel confident and competent about it, that's where we come in to say, look, we'll support you to have the skills and the tools to be able to have those conversations, to know where to signpost people to, because it's not fair expecting people to know either.
Right. Because there's, like you said, you showed the book. You should, you know, we could show our bookshelves and our files of all the training that we have. And it's we get it. We get it. Yeah. So that's, but knowing that you have resources out there and just educating yourself.
And that's why I'm glad you asked that question, because it was in that moment, it was some leap of faith to take, to leave that job and then just go forward. But it genuinely, and I hadn't anticipated it, but it was genuinely, I just couldn't unsee it. To say, you know, find your passion and do it purposely, or do it with purpose. And that's kind of, that's what happened. That's what happened. It just kind of springboarded. And obviously, I had all the connections and contacts, and I got to work.
Yep. That's what it takes. I love it. Such a great story. Now, Emma, when you were approached with the idea of this book, Women Excelling Everywhere, what attracted you to that?
Well, the fact that it was all women always appeals to me, in terms of there's always a common theme, there's always alignment. And I think, or I believe, that a book is a beautiful way to allow women to be heard, and also to reach people. You know, a book is something that you can hold and have with you all the time, and lift and take what you need from it in that moment. And to all the women out there in the world that are going to read this book, feel this book, see themselves in the book, being part of that, it's an honor, and it's something really special. And I believe, hopefully, I'd imagine you do too, everybody has a story to tell, and to have the privilege to have a chapter in a book on women excelling everywhere, to even give people a bit of an understanding and hope and background as to how it comes about and what it takes. And if I can give any tips or insight into different things, it's truly an honor. And on a personal level, a little bit of a selfish level, it reminds me and it heals me and it brings me back, and having the privilege to share it is a beautiful feeling as well. And I mean, who doesn't want to excel? What woman, you know, that has a bit of a vision and a dream? And that really caught me.
Yeah. And I love, you made the comment earlier in the conversation about your daughter and how that changed you and, being a parent, changes us. And there are, so that's kind of, for me, that was like the perfect, or the purpose of the book was helping women excel wherever they're at. So when I say everywhere, it's really wherever they're at. It doesn't mean in your career, it doesn't mean in your entrepreneurial endeavor. It can be in your personal growth, it can be in your parenting, it can be in your relationship with a significant other. Like, it's just, let's just lift and help
Excel.
everyone
Yeah, and
excel.
like I've mentioned some of that in my chapter, and like it's lovely to be able to, I suppose, frame like what I would have been whenever I had my daughter so young. Excelling as a mother was what was really important to me then. And
Yes.
then as she got older, excelling then in educating myself to get us out of poverty. Because we were. So getting an education along with my daughter to give us a better life. So as
Yeah.
each chapter unfolds in your life, you excel in something different. And that's the beauty of having all the co-authors coming from all different backgrounds and ideas of what it is, and allowing that to go out into the world. It's an amazing thing to do.
I love it. And your chapter is titled Success Defined on Your Terms. So give us just a little, I mean, you kind of just did, but give us a little teaser on what your chapter is about and what the readers are going to experience.
So I do frame it, as I said, I frame it from, I suppose, where I came from and some of the challenges that I maybe faced in my life that a lot of people might be able to resonate with. And certainly the odds were stacked against us on those early days. So mindset is huge in terms of that there. But also, success on your terms means to me, quite often, people think success is one thing, it's a certain thing. So whether it's money in the bank, whether it's having 10 houses, whether it's driving a car, but sometimes it is freedom and choices. The freedom to make the choices, whatever you choose to do in your life. So success is personal to everybody, but it's really important to know what success means to you, what your values and goals are, and that's what you work towards achieving. And there's where the success lies in your life.
I love that. I love that. And I can't wait to see the reviews coming in because the messages in the book are so great. And that's such a powerful message. We have to kind of really internally identify what do we want in success? Because I was the same way as you. When I became a mom, I homeschooled my kids. And I always told people, and to this day, if there was anything written on my epitaph, that I would want it to be, I wouldn't want it to be this long list of certifications that I've gotten or the years of education. It would be, she was a great mom. Like, that's what I want. And so during that time, my kids are all in their 30s, and so they have their own families, and I still am trying to be a great mom to them. But that's, during those years, I just wanted to be successful in that, not in a career, not in a, and now I'm actually pushing more to be more successful in my relationship with my husband. We've been married for 37 years, but for the first 30 of them, we were just mom and dad.
But do you see how it changes? So you
Sure, yeah.
really have to know what it is you're striving for or what the priority is at the time. So that's why I say success, it's so personal. So you get to choose what success means to you, not society. You get to choose.
Yes, absolutely. I love it. You know what? This has been a wonderful conversation, Emma. And I so appreciate your contribution to the book. I am very excited about the future things that we're going to be doing. We're going to have a summit in a few weeks, and it's just going to be amazing. We're going to continue this entire movement of helping women excel everywhere, wherever they're at and whatever they need. So I love that. And mental health and mental wealth is so important. Part of that equation, right? So thank you so much for being a part of the book and for being on the podcast today.
The pleasure is all mine, I can assure you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. All right. And for everyone listening, be sure to check out the book. It is available on digital right now. It is, you can go to Amazon. We'll be sure to put in the links or in the show notes, the links for the digital version. And as of March 8th, You will be able to order the paperback as well. It is available in many different countries. So be sure to check that out. You'll be able to read 15. I tell people it's not just 15 stories. It's 15 stories with messages, with lessons, with tips. And it's going to resonate. One of those, if not more, is going to resonate with each of the people who read it. So check that out. If you have thoughts regarding this podcast, if you have thoughts and ideas or people you would like to see interviewed on the Women Excelling Everywhere, be sure to send us an email at info@womenexcellingeverywhere.com. Be watching over the next few weeks because we will continue to drop these podcasts as I interview all of the contributors to this amazing book that is out now. And you'll get to meet them all, see their faces, put a face to that name. And it'll be wonderful, wonderful to connect with each of them. We'll also have all the ways that you can connect with Emma. You will find in the book as well as in the show notes. We also, of course, have launched our private membership community, Women Excelling Everywhere, that is just about that, is to help you excel wherever you're at. So be sure to check that out, womenexcellingeverywhere.com. We'll have the link to that private Women Excelling Everywhere Success Collective. All right. And for now, that wraps up this particular episode of the Women Excelling Everywhere. As I close out all my podcasts, I want everyone to just take a nice deep breath. Roll those shoulders back. Go out there and simply enjoy every moment. Until next time.